Now it's time for the final of our series on the craft of writing. Tara Moss is a best-selling writer of novels and nonfiction, and Tara's been unpacking the writing process for you here on The Hub. And writing believable characters, it's just so important to whether a novel works or not, don't you think, Tara?
I agree completely, Claire. You have to make a reader really interested in the characters and really invested in them. They have to be believable, they have to be compelling. And over the last 20 years, I've always been asked, you know, where do characters come from? And I find the inspiration for characters everywhere. People are fascinating, but I'm very interested to hear from a couple of different authors today about where characters emerge for them.
I'm looking forward to this. You've spoken to some really wonderful writers through this series. And for this one on crafting character, you have John Purcell and Melissa Lukashenko.
That's right. Two really wonderful writers whose work I enjoy, but are very different. Melissa Lukashenko is a multi-award-winning gory writer. Her 2013 novel, Mullumbimby, was awarded the Deloitte Queensland Literary Prize for Fiction, and it also won the Victorian Premier's Prize for Indigenous Writing. Her latest novel is Too Much Lip. John Purcell has worked in the book industry for the last 20 years, and in 2012, he wrote under a pseudonym. He wrote an erotic series, but his latest book, his novel, The Girl on the Page, is just coming out now, and it's published under his own name. Hi, Melissa Lukashenko and John Purcell.
Hello.
Jingiwala.
Now, as a writer and avid reader, I've always been fascinated by where characters come from, and I know I get asked about this all the time. So, Melissa Lukashenko, you've said, it is an absolute joy to create characters. It really is. It is like nothing else. I love that quote, and I'm wondering what you meant by that.
Oh, I suppose except in the sense of being a parent who gets to, I don't know how my children would phrase it, but, you know, getting to mould young minds, I suppose, and exert some kind of control over another human's development. Apart from that, it's really, or maybe teaching, it's the only time you get that kind of freedom to, they say you should write the scenes you didn't get to live. And in my novels, I do draw heavily from life, but I also get to meet the people that I didn't get to meet, or meet them under different circumstances, if you like.
Now, John Purcell, I really like this quote from you. A lot of guys I know stay in the men's section. They read their Cormac McCarthy and their Martin Amis, and they will return again and again to this cul-de-sac of maledom. But once I crossed over to reading women authors, I never crossed back. What changed for you when you started reading more female authors, and did that influence the way you approached character?
Yes, it aligned with my life experience. I was, you know, I've got two older sisters who are very strong-minded and used to set me straight all the time. And my life experience, I'm always drawn to strong women and women who know what they're about. And when I was reading these books, I sort of divide books up into male-male books and male-female books. And there are male-male writers that just, I don't even know whether they've ever met a woman or if they had a longer conversation with a woman. And their books.
I think Melissa and I might agree that we have the same experience sometimes when we read certain authors.
Yeah, it's astounding. And they generally attract the male-male mind, and there's a kind of a cul-de-sac of, and it blinds them. And then there are the great writers who can do both, who are the male-female writers. And I was always drawn to them. I didn't realise that's what I was being drawn to until I started to really read women. And I mean, I started reading women in my early 20s, so it's been most of my reading life. But once I crossed over, there's absolutely no going back. I was hungry for the other view.
Chapter one of your latest book, Too Much Lip, Melissa, opens with this magnificent, gory woman roaring into town on a stolen Harley. She's got a soft tail and she's being stared at. She's, as it says, a skinny, dark girl in a big, shiny, soft tail. She's outspoken, she's tough, she's funny, she's a woman after my own heart. And you had a really fascinating muse for this character of Carrie Salter. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, I was dimly aware as I started writing the book and partway through that I was channeling my great-grandmother or her story, in a way, the spirit of her story, into the book. And Christina was a Bundjalung woman taken away from her homelands to the north of Brisbane. back in the late 1800s at a time when she was illiterate and basically a slave as a child. And as a young woman, she had children with an Irish timber cutter. And in her 20s, she was out in the scrub one day near Walvoy in the Gympie area, and a local man had been harassing and stalking her. And Christina was out shooting pigeons to get greenies to eat. And this bloke was out there fencing, and he was he approached her and managed to get the gun off her. And then Christina picked up a stick. He managed to get the stick off her. This is out in the scrub, isolated, with nobody around to help. And she picked up a rock, standing in the road, and picked up a rock to defend herself from this man. And somehow in the struggle, he must have dropped the rifle, because Christina found herself in court a few weeks later on charges of attempted murder. And in the newspaper reports of the incident, it said that she had shot him in the hip, but I think that was a euphemism, and that as a crack shot who used her rifle to get her food, she'd actually shot him in the groin.
And, appropriate.
Yeah, and the man said in court that she was only a gin and he could do what he liked with her. And Christina stood up in court and said, "Yes, I did shoot him, Your Honour. I was aiming for his heart, and I'm only sorry I did not kill him." And because it was a black man, she managed to get off. I'm sure if it had been a white man, my family story would have been very different. And so her feistiness and her fight and her willingness to do anything to survive is what I was channeling in this book.
What was it like for you learning about that part of your family history? Was this something that you knew about before, or something that unfolded in the writing?
I knew the base. Well, I knew there'd been an incident with a gun and that she had shot someone as a teenager, or sort of in my 20s and 30s. But it was only recently, it was only maybe 5 years ago, that I found out the full detail of the story, and that the man had been, you know, harassing her, and that she just had enough. And, you know, she decided, bugger it, I'm going to shoot this prick. And yeah, so you can't, as a novelist, you can't pass up a gift like that. And while I didn't write that incident, I certainly used the spirit of a woman who wasn't going to be beaten around anymore, wasn't going to be bullied and harassed and made a plaything of men.
And that's really, it's so vividly portrayed in this book, which is, I think, why I love the character of Carrie so much. Now, you take on the tough and important issues of generational trauma, Aboriginal displacement, incarceration, abuse, racism.
In a funny way, though.
That's it. You balance the blows with insight, with humour, with wit, you know, and that kind of unique humour of survivors. That's how I see it anyway when I'm reading the work. And I was wondering if the process of character creation in this book was very different than with your previous books.
Well, it was in a way, because my mother passed away in 2014, and I therefore had more free rein to draw upon members of my family. No character ever emerges fully formed from real life, or very, very rarely, and it doesn't for me. But I certainly drew upon my older brothers when I was constructing the characters of Ken, for example, and people I know strongly influenced Black Superman. And yeah, there's a few women in my life who are there's a lot of Carrie in them, I suppose.
I'm author Tara Moss, doing a special series for the Hub on Books on the craft of writing. And today I'm talking with authors Melissa Lukashenko and John Purcell about creating characters. Now, John Purcell, your characters in The Girl on the Page draw from 20-odd years of experience in the book industry. You've got Bed-Hopping Amy, where the book begins. You've got Helen and Malcolm. I'm interested to know how your insider knowledge and that experience of the book industry as a bookseller, as a book reader, informed the characters in this particular book.
Well, Helen and Malcolm have been with me for years. I used to sit in a secondhand bookshop. I sat there for 10 years, not making much money and sharing my opinions with anyone who walked in. And I used to get into long...
Is there a correlation there?
I think there was a definite correlation between those two. And I used to have these long, wonderful conversations with what I consider my teachers, these older, extraordinarily well-read articulate people who would come in, and I wouldn't really know much more about them than our sometimes monthly, sometimes yearly conversations. And they were my teachers. They informed what I read and helped me navigate through this amazing world of literature that we live in. And there are certain similarities between them, and that's what I sort of drew on. Their goodness, their frustration, I think, also with the way the world was going. Their ability to take in the world around them and to analyze it based on the information for all their reading. They're very bright, very interesting people. And within the larger scope, Malcolm and Helen definitely stem from my secondhand book world, which is a very closed world. It was like a nunnery in a way. It was a very protected environment. And then I stepped out of that environment and I joined Australia's largest online bookseller, Booktopia. And it's a complete turnaround. People who know me from the bookshop don't know me, don't recognise this person that has happened since Booktopia. I got to meet wonderful writers, living ones. Generally, I was spending most of my time...
Better to meet the living ones, I find.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Good point, Melissa. Point taken.
It had more commercial interests and aspects to it than I'd ever encountered before. And that side of things and all my dealings with modern publishers informs the Amy character and all the things that Amy brings to the story.
When I was in my 20s, I set out to write my first novels, and that was my Mac Vanderwall series. And for that, I wrote a character, a central character I knew pretty well. She was tall, blonde, Canadian-born. You might tell by my accent, that's where I was born. And she had a similar background. She rode motorbikes. She had a good roundhouse kick. As many pointed out, she was perhaps a little bit too much like the author. Essentially, I was writing what I knew, but I was also branching out and writing what I wanted to research in terms of the plot and the other characters. But I guess I wanted that central character to be familiar and comfortable for me. It's interesting to me that you both bring so much personal knowledge and experience to your work, and in different ways. Melissa Lukashenko, you bring great insight for us into Aboriginal knowledge and experience and history, including in the award-winning Mullumbimby and now Too Much Lip. And John, you bring knowledge of the book industry to The Girl on the Page. So my question is it a case of writing what or who you know? Melissa, what do you think?
This is going to sound quite silly, but it was only a few short years ago that I realised that it wasn't cheating to do research. From somewhere I had unconsciously adopted the idea that if I went out and deliberately sought out characters or sought out plots or sought out settings, I was somehow being inauthentic. So up until probably Mullumbimby, I wrote purely from experience. As I said before, the character is never one person, but I'd take four or five or six people and blend them together into one character. So I suppose in that sense, research has not been something I've done a lot of until... even now, I draw much more heavily upon actual life, and because, you know, I come across so many fascinating people in ordinary life. I work with women leaving prison on a weekly basis, and I was having a conversation with a woman in Logan the other day who was asking me if I'd heard about a murder that had just happened, and I couldn't remember if I'd read about a murder or read about some other crime in the paper. She told me that, you know, they weren't reliable witnesses, you know, and she was using the language of the court in her underclass vernacular, because that's the only way she had to express her doubts about these particular guys. And, this sort of ice-using, homeless Aboriginal grandmother who's just the biggest scammer on the face of the earth. You don't have to go far when you're presented with characters like that on a weekly basis.
And where is Logan, Melissa?
Logan is a city, a satellite city of Brisbane, just south of Brisbane, and it's one of Australia's 10 poorest urban areas.
Did you find then that the characters sort of guided the narrative in that sense?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, because my characters were fully formed, absolutely, at the beginning of the writing of the first draft, or very soon thereafter. And yeah, there's things that your characters are naturally going to do and are naturally not going to be doing. And so, you know, I had plotted for Kerry to go back to Queensland at one point during the novel, but that just didn't fit with the way her character was by that stage of the book. So yeah, the characters and I found out what was going to happen together.
I love when characters surprise me. It often leads to, you know, the rewriting will be often driven by the characters actually developing in a different way during the writing process and me needing to kind of go back and adjust their dialogue or even their actions to fit with the person that they became during the writing process. Now, with the girl on the page, John, I was wondering, when you were creating these characters, did you get a sense of characters that you liked and disliked, or do you like the flaws in them? Do you feel are they like your children, that you love them equally or you're supposed to, or the characters you're writing that you actually dislike?
I can't help but like them. I love the flaws. I will add more and more flaws to people. I think in novels where there's a real standout bad guy that doesn't seem to have any, good points at all, I finally get bored. And I really enjoy writing characters that are three-dimensional, have good points and have these horrible points, and circumstances that can be read from different people's point of view. I think that's so important as writing character, to be aware of how the one scene can be seen from the three or four people in it and all the time, and have them misinterpret things, because they all bring their own histories to that moment. And instead of just looking at the plot and what is required of the plot, I think books become richer when we can see through the eyes of these different people and to consider each scene from the different perspectives of people in encountering the scene.
What comes first for you, would you say? Is it plot, research, character? What's first and foremost for you as a writer?
Images. I had an image of a shark. I had the image of the talking crows on the country road with the sun beating down on Kerry's head on the motorbike. And I had the image of a bird with its beak clamped shut by the skull of a snake. And I started with those images and worked outward from there, like a stone falling into a pond.
And John Purcell, for
my,
you?
Mine's definitely character. So characters start to wander about in my brain. And, I mean, Amy was wandering in one part of my brain and Malcolm and Helen were comfortably seated on a sofa in another part of my brain. I didn't think they were going to be in the same book. And that's probably one of the reasons why I couldn't find a spot for Amy. I just couldn't find a story. I had it for years in my head. And when they met, they're suddenly, bang, there was my story.
Thank you both so much for your insights. I've really enjoyed our chat. So thank you, Melissa Lukashenko and John Purcell.
Thanks, Tara.
Thank you, Tara.